There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We actually have to bring in somebody else into the conversation because we're going to talk about food. We're going to make you all very hungry. We have Ava Ahmed in the studio, who's the founder of Frying Pan Adventures. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here, Annabelle.
So could you tell us a little bit about Frying Pan Adventures and how that adventure of yours started?
So when I moved back to Dubai, that was in 2010. Dubai was home for me. My folks are originally from India, but we call Dubai home. And I had been away for 9 years in the US studying and then working. And I came back to a city that felt like a complete stranger because Dubai measures change not in decades and not in years, but in months. And I had been coming on and off, but I think coming back and living in the city, suddenly I just felt like I couldn't connect. You know, it had grown so big and so fast. And so what I started doing is what I do in any foreign city, which is I just started to eat my way through it, you know, because when I meet the small guys on the corner just frying up something simple, or I have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, it's my way of connecting, because for me, food is one of the most powerful connections, which doesn't require language at all to form a connection with someone who's serving you. And I started writing about it. And over time, I just became so passionate about it that I literally had this moment where I went up to my dad. So the whole point of me coming back home to Dubai was to help my dad in his family business. That was my dream since I was 10. But this idea of taking people to these places that were reconnecting me to Dubai was so strong that I walked up to him and I said, "Dad, I feel really guilty taking a paycheck from your company because I think about food the whole day." And 3 months later, he eventually supported my decision to leave and start Frying Pan Adventures. And that was quite the journey, because in 2012, I was, you know, wide-eyed. I said, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I'm going to start this company. And then all the legal stuff started, like, you know, figuring out the trade license, all of the boring stuff that nobody tells you about, which is so unglamorous. And during that time, it took me about 12 months to get my license. I actually started to pick up these books about food and read, because I had done a test tour where I was taking people to eat, but I had nothing interesting to say, and there were all these awkward silences, and I was like, how do we fill up these silences? And so I started to read these books, which were not just cookbooks, but they were books on food stories. And that suddenly started to give me this idea that these tours were not just meant to be about going from restaurant to restaurant eating something, but it had to be about food with stories, because food is so much more than just ingredients on a plate. And there were a couple of key books that completely changed my perspective earlier on, and that's eventually what Frying Pan became. It's not just a food tour, but it's a performance which weaves together flavor and history and culture.
When you were reading books to, after that test tour, and you're thinking, oh, I need something to say, what books did you turn to?
One was, the most important one was actually by Anya Ciazaldo, which is A Day of Honey. And she spoke about, she's a journalist, her husband is a journalist, and they went into Iraq after everyone thought the war was over, but actually it was very much alive and it was very difficult. And she didn't write a book about her war experiences or just about politics, but she actually used food as a way of talking about the situation and the culture and the history. Because she says that, you know, when we talk about war, we only talk about the war. We don't talk about all those moments in between the war that are important to help people feel human. And those are the moments that she puts down. So she talks about, she goes back to, you know, Mesopotamia, and her book, the bibliography of her book essentially is what gave me, which has continued to give me enough fuel. So now when, for example, we hire a new person, they have like the stack of literature that they have to get through, because that's so important before they start the tours.
That's brilliant. If you've just tuned in, you are listening to Talking of Books. I'm Annabelle. Co-hosting with me is Flora Reese, and you're just listening to Ava Ahmed from Frying Pan Adventures, talking about how she started Frying Pan Adventures in the first place and all the reading that she had to do to inspire that journey.
Who's really making us feel hungry here in the studio today.
Yeah, you didn't bring any food though. I'm so upset.
I'm upset too. I don't know how I walked out of the house without my usual set of snacks, but yeah, big faux pas. We're going to have to do this again.
Yeah, we will have to.
And Ava's here to do the Book of the Week, which we're about to start.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading.
So the first book that we have is basically, it's more of an author conversation, because I know that you're a massive fan of this author. because everybody is maybe not as much of a fangirl as you are, we're going to give them a little taste of her background. Have a listen to this.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading.
Claudia Rodin is a food writer. She writes about the foods of the Middle East, North Africa and the Mediterranean, in particular Italy and Spain, with a special interest in the social, cultural and historical background of food. Her first book, A Book of Middle Eastern Food, is said to have transformed Western attitudes to the cuisines of the Middle East and North Africa. It's currently being dramatized for a BBC Radio 4 series to be heard in 2018. Rodin is the president of the Oxford Symposium of Food and Cookery and an honorary fellow at University College London and the School of Oriental and African Studies. She lives in London.
There you go. There's a little bit of information about Claudia Rodin, who Ava Ahmed from Frying Pan Adventures is a really big fan of. So what is it about Claudia that made you become such a fangirl, and when were you first introduced to Claudia Rodin's cookery?
Well, let me say it this way, that if I have Stephanie and Nahala also do my Middle Eastern tour along with me, and this I think should explain everything, is when we sat together and we realized that Claudia Rodin was going to be in Dubai, we said, you know, what if ever she were on our tour? And all three of us looked at each other and were like, well, essentially we'd have to hand the mic over to her because we say everything from her book. Her book, I don't use this as a cookbook, to be honest. I use it as a reference book, as a book of history. I just want to read out one of the things she says. She says, this book is not only about pleasure and enjoyment, it is also a way of discovering other worlds and cultures. The preface of her complete Middle Eastern cookbook is a prerequisite. When someone joins our team, that's the first thing you've got to read, because it dissects the entire Middle East, not just in terms of the different regions, but in terms of history. And for me, growing up in the region, I never had this grasp. You kind of get siloed and we just see the Lebanese restaurants and we assume that's everything. But she actually started to break it apart and show sort of all of the nuances. And I think that's what excited me, is that suddenly it wasn't just a bowl of hummus, but it was so much more than that. She was weaving history and culture. And by putting it at the start of her book, she almost said that, you know, she's sort of claiming that it's imperative to understand the background before you start cooking the dishes. And I think that's so beautiful.
The thing that I noticed, because I did a little bit of research on your Frying Pan Adventure tours before you came on, and that was one of the things you said, was that when people come here, especially tourists, visitors, and they see like shawarma and falafel, they think, okay, these are Emirati dishes, and that's not the case. So if you were going to take somebody somewhere Emirati and traditional, where would you take them?
The top places, I would say, is Al Fanar, which is very well respected for local food. Arabian Tea House has a very, very good selection of Emirati dishes. I've actually taken, my test is if you take an Emirati family and they like those dishes, then it's a good place. So good. I've taken an Emirati family there. Their Salona, their Majboos, their Emirati breakfast is delicious, to the point where I've begged them to do their Emirati breakfast even at night, because I love it so much. So I think those are the top two that I would pick. I've heard that Seven Sands is very good, but personally I've not been there. Ooh, and the one where we do our Emirati cooking class, of course, which is Asila. It's happening right now. So Asila is under Chef Uwe Mikkel, who is one of the sort of mentors of cooking in general in the UAE. And he wrote a book called The Flavors of Dubai, and he's got a restaurant in the Radisson Blue, one of the oldest hotels in Dubai. And they're making Emirati food, but Emirati food that's sort of, he truly believes in taking this very home-style food and putting it into a format that's palatable from a restaurant standpoint. So he's retained the tradition, but at the same time given it a little bit of a facelift.
There is more of a connection between you and the festival, other than the fact that you adore Claudia Rodin and she's coming to the festival in March. And that's that your Frying Pan Adventures are something, that these food tours are something that our authors tend to go on as part of their kind of social cultural program, when we let them have maybe an hour or two to themselves and not sit in a room telling everybody about their books. So do you have any fun stories from those adventures?
Well, we did two tours last year, and I don't think I have a specific story. What I think it was very nerve-wracking because you have to understand our tours are not just about serving food. We are weaving in a lot of literature. We are making references to a lot of history. We didn't have anyone that we were quoting from, thankfully, last year. So that makes us really nervous, but really excited. We get goosebumps, but at the same time, we're petrified. but I was really amazed at how receptive people were and just fun, and they really got into their element. And it's amazing how food can really be this. I mean, we had someone who was writing nonfiction, and we had someone who was, you know, writing a history book. I mean, food can just connect people with so many different tastes. Suddenly it's sort of this equalizer across the board. I do have one story of an author who kind of came on her own, and that was Anya. That was Anya Ciazalda, who was the author who inspired me to do the tours in the way that I do. So I get this email one day, and it said, hey, I'm going to be talking at Abu Dhabi at the university, and I want to get my students. And I nearly fell off my chair. Because how do you take Anya Ciazalda on a tour which has essentially been crafted by her words? I mean, it's the same as if Claudia Rodin were to come on the tour. We'd essentially be speechless.
Oh, wow. So it's Stephen King asking you, hey, can you tell me about horror writing?
Exactly. You know,
because we're going to tell you that you don't know.
Yeah. The guide is constantly, kind of constantly looking at them like, okay, do they approve? Do they not? Do they approve? Do they not? It's really nerve-wracking.
So the thing that I am curious about, and you said that these tours, you cover quite a lot of ground, don't you? How long does that actually take?
It takes about 4 hours and 15 minutes. I always have to wrap myself to stick to that time. We've actually reduced it from the five and a half hour marathons that they used to be. We've made it a little bit more under control because, again, it's not just the food. It's not just the eating. It's a lot of storytelling.
Claudia Rodin. Other than Claudia Rodin, what other Middle Eastern inspiration did you have for your food tour?
I think a lot of the Oxford Symposium, actually, which she's basically the sort of heading, that has been a key part of the literature that we use. There's a book called A Taste of Time. And I think it's been edited by Sami Zubeda and Richard Tepper. But they have a bunch of short essays, and it is so interesting for the food geek. I mean, they have an entire white paper on baklava or how rice has traveled. And each of these are by a different set of authors. So you can literally pick up that author. Like, for example, one of the authors is Charles Perry, who's written all about medieval Arab cookery. He gets really deep. So again, Charles Perry is another one from the symposium that whose work we've heavily relied on.
I'd like to pick up on one of the things you said earlier about the fact that you wouldn't use, the particular book that you have of Claudia Rodin's in front of you. What's the title of that one?
That's The Complete Middle Eastern Cookbook, and it's her revised version because the first one came out in the 70s. So this one is the new book of Middle Eastern food. It's updated.
So you don't use it for cooking. You use it for how she talks about food and the journey of food and why you have that bowl of hummus in front of you. And I'm glad you brought that up because I have a copy of hers. It's called Arabesque. And
yes.
It's a massive book. It's really
thick. I love that. I have that one too.
And it feels less like a cookbook and more like a history book.
Yes.
A cultural text. I mean, you can't obviously use it as a cookbook. She has some wonderful recipes in there. But it's more about the way she writes about food. And you sit down and I think you curl up with this cookbook. You don't kind of flip open a page and start cooking from it in a hurry. It's definitely something to savor, something to enjoy. Is that the case with most of her cookbooks, do you think?
I think that's more
case
with me, actually, because I tend to read through cookbooks in their entirety or as reference materials, right. And then I take away suggestions and I make things in my own kitchen. There are people who I've met who absolutely use Claudia Rodin's book, you know, ingredient by ingredient. There is one recipe, and I think it's an arabesque, which I use time and again. It's so simple. Roasted eggplants, so you roast them, you brush them with olive oil, salt, pepper, pomegranate, molasses. You roast them and you can actually smell, you know when they're done, when you can smell sort of sweetness in the air. That's when you know it's done. And then you pull them out, you whip some yogurt tahine garlic. You can add some lemon juice in there if you like. So you just whip that up, pour it over the eggplant and garnish it with pine nuts and pomegranate seeds and you're done.
It's very cruel of you that you didn't bring any snacks today.
That's what you can do when you go home, I guess.
And I love what she says here about using this, but this is arabesque. Trust your taste, allow yourself certain freedom in the preparation of dishes. This is the spirit of these cuisines, which, though faithful to tradition, have no absolute rules and are rich in variations and poor in precision. And that's how you cook.
Preach. Absolutely. You know, if you look at Charles Perry has translated some of the first Arabic cookbooks. We have translations of, in our frying pan library, we have translations of the first Arabic cookbooks that were discovered. And it's amazing because when you read them, they have no ingredient list. The recipe is about four lines. It might say, put the dough in a pan, put the birds inside, put some almonds, cook it for a couple of minutes, and then serve it, inshallah, if God wills. And every recipe ends with, serve it if God wills.
Oh, that's fantastic. I actually like that, though. I like not having strict rules in the kitchen, like, you know, just eyeballing it. Mm.
The two of the rules we have at home, I cook a lot with my children, is firstly, try and clear up along as you go along, which my husband doesn't believe we ever
That's
do.
That's excellent.
But it's a good one to try.
I can't do that.
And the second is, it doesn't matter if you haven't got the ingredients, try something else.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if the main ingredient is chicken and you don't have a chicken,
don't improvise.
I think if people didn't improvise, we wouldn't have as many. We'd have like just, you know, maybe, I don't know, we'd have a very finite set of dishes. Mm. The improvisation is the mother of discovery.
Exactly. There's those family recipes that are a little bit of a twist on whichever one it was.
If we relied on me for coming up with new dishes, there wouldn't be any, because I would just cook fried potatoes all the time.
Which are delicious, with some sumac and labneh on the side.
Yeah, I did want to mention one thing, and I've completely forgotten what it was. But when we were talking about Claudia Roden and kind of recipes that are just like those four lines and you're not given any instructions. You know, some people really don't work well that way. Some people, when faced with that, see not freedom, but just sheer terror.
That's like my husband. Yeah, I remember we were making custard once and I said, can you stir the custard and you'll know when it's done? And he said, how many stirs? So there are people who need sort of that, you know, very engineering mind, need that exact precision. But I really do feel food is about art and creativity.
Can you tell who those people are when they come on your tour?
I can't actually, because I mean, a lot of people who will ask me for recipes are usually the ones who are very comfortable with a high level version of it. There are a few people who will follow up and say, I need you to email me the exact recipe, and then they will follow up and then I have to scan it and I have to send it. So there are very few people like that who will do that. But usually if I get a recipe question during the tour, it's someone who's very comfortable with just general direction.
Thank you so much, Ava. We're going to have to take a quick moment there. And if you just tuned in, we were talking to Ava Ahmed from Frying Pan Adventures. He's making us very hungry in the studio. She brought no snacks, but very annoyed with her. So we're going to punish her by keeping her on air. We've just talked about Claudia Roden, who you're a huge fan of. And we're now moving on to something slightly different. It's not a cookbook. It's a memoir, but from a huge name in cuisine. His name's Ken Hom. Have you heard much about Ken Hom before? Have you followed his recipes? Or is this your first time with Ken Hom?
It's the Emirates Lit Fest that's introduced me to Ken Hom. Growing up here in Dubai, at least, I don't believe that he was a phenomenon. We didn't follow him the way, I guess, folks in Britain did.
Yes, I'm Generation Ken, so we grew up
Generation
with his Chinese cookbook, and it was one of the things that we really focused on. I was a kid, it was one year, my cousins came to stay, and we spent the week crafting an entire Chinese meal from his recipe, including going to Chinatown in London, in order to put on a meal for our grandparents at the end of the week.
And how did it go?
It went really well.
Yeah, well, thanks to Ken. I have never heard that before. Gen Y, Gen X, never heard of Gen Ken.
But, you know, he was a huge phenomenon for Asian Chinese cooking in the UK.
And his dishes aren't complicated, no. Really.
And he makes them so joyful. He's you know, his love of cooking is just all pervasive. I think it's fantastic.
He's a really funny guy, and you get that from reading the memoir. Also, I know that you're the expert on structure, but my opinion is I think it's a very well structured book.
It's really interesting because it dashes back and forth, but it all ties together in the end,
right? Mm. And it's impressive, because you think if you told me how he'd done it, I'd think, oh, that sounds messy, that sounds complicated.
And you sometimes think, where's he going with this? But actually, the anecdotes, it's just a lovely, lovely celebration of food and his life.
And he ties up the anecdotes with various recipes along the way, doesn't he? So he's always bringing food in along this amazing life that he's had, teaching, doing cookery courses, learning French cuisine, meeting Julia Child, and then...
Julia Child!
Julia Child!
Julia Child!
But I think life back then was so... I mean, I was so envious about that life, in the sense that it's so laissez-faire, it's so unplanned, you could travel on a nickel, you know, and now you you'd need a plan. Like, you need a plan. We have too much information. We have social media. I mean, there's everything is so sort of structured. And you can't have, I mean, the kinds of really weird experiences that he's had, I just don't think they happen if you have that kind of structure.
I do think what he always does is grab opportunities. So anything that comes up, he'll take it, exactly. Regardless of where it's going to go and
see
what happens.
The people that he's cooked for. Yeah. The list is ridiculous. You can actually go online and you have to scroll and scroll and scroll to just get through all the people that he's cooked for. And I guarantee you've heard of every single one of them. He's a busy guy. Now, speaking of, I was going to do a little pun there. Can you give us a flavour of his writing? But can you actually read a bit out? Because I know there's a bit that you want to read, Ava.
Sure. This was when he was taking people to Hong Kong to experience the food, and he was doing the cookery classes there. And the paragraph that sort of gave me goosebumps was this one, which said, "The day would end with dinner in the new territories and at a restaurant that specialised in a dish of pigeon. The pigeon is partly braised in a sauce, then dried for 5 hours in front of a fan, and then it is fried to look like crispy Peking duck. The sauce in which the pigeon is braised is a master stock, which has been cooking for about 80 years and is regularly topped up. There were, say, 15 of us, each receiving a pigeon. So 15 pigeons were carried out on a tray, and the custom is to eat the birds with your hands, a tradition that met with no resistance from my crowd. The dish is sensational, and the students would return to the hotel shattered, but with an understanding of my vision of Hong Kong."
Sorry, did you say 80 years?
80 years. I had to read that again. I said, is that a typo? And then I realized, no, but that's Southeast Asia. I mean, there's so much in that. It's not just technique, but just that. There's so much history in what you're eating, literally. And I think that he brings that alive.
A friend of mine recently was super impressed with the fact that he just got a sous vide. So it was taking him about 3 days to cook this turkey or whatever. I'm just going to bring this up next time I see him and say, yeah, 80 years, 3 days. I think someone else is winning there. You have something else that you wanted to read out, because this is an illustration of him talking about the people that he meets along the way and how much of a contrast somebody who arrived in his life was to him.
This is from when he was travelling in the UK. "Michael Levine provided me with an assistant, Sue Burke. She was also my driver, and as the road trip progressed, she became a funny, entertaining companion. As we drove, we sang the oldies but goldies, mostly the Rolling Stones or the Beatles. Sue's a northern girl, born in Southport, Lancashire, and grew up in the south in Middlesex. Rainer's Lane, she told me, end of the Metropolitan line. She was, and remains, a lovable, tough cookie who said it like it was. She explained to me what I should and should not say. Ken, we don't do that here. I learnt so much. It was through an education from Sue that I came to feel more British than American. Sue didn't cook much and had little interest in food. It was merely fuel. She was not an adventurous gourmet. As we drove, I asked her what she'd have for her final meal, and Sue said, for starters, shish kebabs, then chicken madras with pilau rice and aloo gobi. For dessert, vanilla ice cream. And yours? I said, caviar, steamed fish and Peking duck. And now I think I would eat it in Rio de Janeiro on the Copacabana beach at sunset, as the setting is perfect and extraordinarily beautiful. Although wok sales were heading rapidly towards a million, Sue had not heard of woks until our meeting. She was blissfully unaware of my TV series and accompanying book. Quite simply, she was not the slightest bit interested in food. She considered me to be a nutcase, because all I talked about was the eating of the last meal and the planning of the next one."
I just love that. She's completely oblivious to how incredible Ken Hom is. And he probably really enjoyed that. And he goes on to talk about the fact that whenever he was in a restaurant, he would try and get her to branch out, and she would just order chips and steak and Yorkshire pudding and gravy. And he could not get her to be adventurous. But I actually think that would make a really funny film. Was Ken Hom's life, yeah. Like a biopic of, and I wonder who would play Sue. But anyways, that's Ken Hom's memoir, My Stir Fried Life. Remember, you can actually buy tickets already to that at emiratslitfest.com, and it's going to be part of a bigger dinner event. So he's curating a menu that you can enjoy while Tom Urquhart from Dubai Eye actually interviews him on stage. So that should be a lot of fun if you're into your Chinese cookery and just want to have a fun night out, really. Next up, I want to move on to something that I find very interesting, because it's a father-daughter story, but also a food story. So take us through the concept of this, Ava, and who the author is.
Sure. So the book is called The International Night by Mark Kurlansky and his daughter, Talia. I think it's fascinating what they did. So every week, he would essentially spin the globe in her hand. Talia would sort of you know, stop it at a point. And wherever her hand fell, on whichever city, whichever country of the world, they would actually cook a meal from there. So that would happen on Friday, or sometimes they would have to delay it or whatever else. But typically it would happen every week. Her hand, supposed, her finger fell more times than any on Kazakhstan, where he had never been to. But essentially what would happen is they would craft not just a meal, but an entire experience around that country. So they would do research into the country. They would come up with a hint so that they could, I guess, say it to their mom, I think it was Marianne. So they would announce the, you know, this night is going to be sort of the international night. And then the hint, she had to guess based on whatever that question was. And then they would cook, let's say, a three-course meal with a beverage on the side. And the goal of this was, you know, sort of to involve Talia as a child in the kitchen. But I think what a fascinating way to learn about history and geography. I think this is how history and geography always needs to be taught, rather than a dry subject in the classroom. It needs to be connected with the things that we're putting into our bodies.
Is that, that's education in general, though. It's incorporating all these disciplines so you figure out that they are not separate, distinct things, but they work together. And that's, you know, messy and complicated like life.
Exactly. Making things holistic, absolutely.
Flora, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, because you obviously were talking about this the other day, and about the fact that you've encouraged your children to cook with you.
Yeah.
And that's become a kind of grown-up child experience, yes. Bonding experience.
We've cooked together since they were very small, and what's lovely is my children both enjoy cooking. My daughter particularly, she does a lot of baking, and she's got, you know, she's 11 now, but you know, for the last few years she'll say, oh, I'm going to go make a cake or some cupcakes, and she'll go away and she'll come back with cupcakes. It's wonderful. And you know, occasionally sort of they both cook meals for us. We've push them into that a little bit, but it's lovely when they do. But cooking with kids is really great. I mean, you have to be able to cope with a bit of mess and a bit of chaos. And we started when they were very small. They would just have little mixes of sugar and a bit of sugar and a bit of flour and a bit of spices, and they mix it all together with water, and they'd make their cakes, and they were so proud of them. And it was lovely, these wonderful pictures of them completely covered.
Did you have to eat them afterwards?
Sometimes you had to try them. But that was great. That was fine. But I love this idea. I think sharing cooking with your children as well as the food is really important, because they're interested in where it comes from. They want to see how the ingredients come together and you know what you can do with the different ingredients in the kitchen. And it can be a very bonding experience as well. And I think I love this book. I mean, I started going straight to the countries that I've been to see what recipes they had up there. I've traveled a lot in Africa, so I was really interested to see what recipes they picked up from that and the way that they had done it. And it's really nicely done. The one thing I would love to have had is a map as well, so I can have pins exactly on all the different countries they've gone to. But I think it's such a fantastic idea and something that I'd like to take home and maybe, you know, do something of this with my kids too.
Just very briefly before we finish up, I want to remind people of something we were talking about earlier, which was the Montegrappa competition, where you can actually win a Khalil Gibran pen. Remember, all you have to do is you need to do a little bit of work on social media. You need to go to at Emirates Lit Fest on Instagram and Facebook, and tag Montegrappa Middle East as well, and a friend, and then you just need to say the name of your favorite piece of work by Khalil Gibran. It's really easy, just a bit of work on social media, takes a couple of minutes, and you're in with a chance to win an incredible pen from Montegrappa. Back to International Night by Mark Kalansky. It's very exciting. I'm going to mention something that you're not going to know until probably the 10th of January, when the full program goes on sale. But the people that we've been talking about today, Claudia Rodin, Mark Kalansky, they're going to be joined on a panel by Mada Jaffrey, who's another big name in cookery, for a panel all about a subject very close to your heart, which is this journey of food and culture and how all that works together. So I'm thinking that that's something that you're definitely going to want to go to.
I'm already there.
Remember, tickets go on sale 10th of January for Foundation Friends and 15th of January for the general public. We're really excited about this. It's only like 54 days away. It's ridiculous. I can't believe how time has flown from when we started the revamped Talking Book Show in September, and we're already here.
And yes, 8 weeks, and we'll be all the welcoming all the authors.
Don't say it in
Dubai.
Weeks.
It's a wonderful thing, Annabelle.
There's so much still to do. No, but it's very exciting. And we can't wait for you to be showing around some of the authors on your food tours.
We're very excited to be able to do that.
A little bit nervous about Claudia Rodin, though, aren't you?
Tiny bit. Maybe we'll beg for her to go on the Indian tour instead.
Okay, all right then.
Which is amazing and delicious.
So the three, just to recap, the three books that you've been chatting about today, or the three authors.
Sure. So Claudia Rodin, and she has extensive literature under her belt, but I specifically refer to the new book of Middle Eastern food, which is her revamped complete Middle Eastern cookbook. And then The International Night by Mark Kurlansky and Talia, his daughter, and then Ken Home, which is his memoirs, My Stir Fried Life.
Well, thank you very much, Alva Ahmed, for coming on and telling us about frying pan adventures and the food that you absolutely love and all that you have a passion for.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.